Welcome to the Diplomacist Podcast, intimate discussions to get behind the headlines.
In this podcast, I speak with Dr. Ira Helfand about the threat posed by nuclear war and what should be done about it.
So I'm here with Dr. Ira Helfand. He's the co-founder of Physicians About Social Responsibility. So yeah, Dr. Helfand, I don't think a lot of people really appreciate the kind of wider impacts which nuclear detonations and nuclear exchange would have on basically our way of life and our lives themselves. Could you speak a little more to that beyond just kind of X number of people will die? Could you speak to the kind of systemic effects it would have?
Sure. I mean, that really goes to the heart of the problem. People tend, if they think about nuclear weapons at all, to think about them fairly abstractly, almost like chess pieces in this elaborate international game. And we've been saying for decades is that really these are a threat to public health. And the medical consequences of nuclear war, what's going to happen if these weapons actually get used, needs to be moved to the center of the debate. This needs to be the starting point. These are incredibly destructive weapons. A single small bomb like Hiroshima can destroy much of a city, kill hundreds of thousands of people. A limited regional nuclear war between smaller nuclear powers like India and Pakistan could cause worldwide climate disruption, could kill 20 million people in South Asia directly from the explosions and the fires, but it could kill perhaps up to 2 billion people worldwide by disrupting climate and causing famine across the planet. This information needs to be at the heart of decision-making about nuclear weapons. But unfortunately, the leaders of many countries, including the United States, which possess nuclear weapons, don't understand fully what's going to happen if these weapons are used. And they get very offended if you tell them that. But when you talk to them about it, it's clear that it's true. They don't understand what's going to happen. And that's kind of scary. It's like a doctor giving you a medicine without any understanding at all of what the effects of the medicine are going to be.
Right. Yeah, it's worrying to think that the ability to basically turn our lives into something out of Mad Max is in the hands of one person, two people maybe, who don't really appreciate the effects. Because in your talk you mentioned about the economic effects and the disruption it would have on the human species. Could you speak a little more to that?
Yeah, at several levels. I mean, even if you consider a small nuclear incident, a terrorist attack, which is the one that people tend to think about, say terrorists got their hands on enough uranium or plutonium to build a primitive nuclear weapon, the sort that blew up Hiroshima, and blew that up in New York or London or Moscow or Tel Aviv or Bombay, hundreds of thousands of people would die, but an entire city would be destroyed, and the economic activity that focuses on that city would be destroyed. And given the interconnectedness of the world economic system right now, there would be ramifications across the planet. After September 11th, people didn't fly in airplanes for months. If terrorists blew up a nuclear device, say in a port, which is the easiest way to smuggle it into a country, shipping would probably be stopped all around the world. Cities would not be willing to let boats come into their harbors for fear that there might be a terrorist attack in the offing. Just that one small explosion could trigger a worldwide depression. If more weapons are used, you get into very substantial disruption of the climate. As I mentioned, that South Asia, the scenario that people have looked at most closely, just 100 Hiroshima-sized bombs, that's only less than 0.5% of the world's nuclear arsenal, would put enough soot into the upper atmosphere to cause worldwide climate disruption, with temperatures across the planet falling abruptly in a matter of 2 or 3 days, with a resulting shortening of the growing season that would persist for a decade, accompanied by a decrease in precipitation persisting for a decade. And there'd be a huge decrease in the amount of food produced with widespread famine.
Are there any plans for this? I mean, I understand that the object of many organizations working within the nuclear realm is to get rid of nuclear weapons, but are there any plans? Is it possible to plan for these scenarios subsequent to this?
Do you mean to plan a response to them?
No, not to plan a humanitarian response. For the United States, after this 3 days of soot and the climate has been disrupted by this limited Southeast Asia exchange, are there plans in place for the U.S. to continue with some semblance of normalcy?
I don't think there really are. I mean, it's been the consensus of the international humanitarian community that there is no response possible. Even in the event of a single nuclear explosion, there's really no response that can be planned to deal with that.
But on the level of food supplies or other structures which could sustain the population beyond the immediate?
There is no significant planning that I'm aware of. And again, the message of groups like the International Committee of the Red Cross has been that no planning is really possible because the magnitude of the disaster would be so great that any plans that you put in place would be inadequate. And it perhaps might create the false sense of security that something was being done. And this has happened in the past when in the 80s, there was a big movement to build fallout shelters and to prepare to survive nuclear war. The fact is that this was really just making more war more likely by creating the false illusion, the illusion that the war could be survived. What we know is that nuclear war really cannot be, the effects of nuclear war cannot be mitigated to any significant degree, no matter how much planning you do.
Right. Yeah, you also spoke about the other kind of big threat, which is it's almost the inverse. It's over such a long time scale that it's very difficult to conceive, especially next to the immediate destruction of nuclear weapons. And that's climate change. What effects would a nuclear exchange have on the climate? Would it accelerate climate change? Would it alter, knock the climate off these kind of long-term cyclical?
I think there are two ways, two intersections between the climate question and the nuclear question. If there's a nuclear war, it does have profound effects on climate worldwide. A limited nuclear war causes a significant cooling episode. A large-scale nuclear war between the United States and Russia does cause what was referred to in the 80s as nuclear winter. It plunges us basically into an ice age in a matter of a few days, which ice age persists for about a decade or more, and would have the most profound impact on human civilization and possibly the survival of our species. The other interesting intersection is the role that climate change of the sort that we're all used to talking about, global warming, the role that might have in triggering nuclear war. Global climate change that is underway now is making it harder and harder for people to live in certain parts of the world. And that becomes a threat multiplier for conflict. When people are having trouble feeding their children because there's no water to irrigate their crops, they often are likely to resort to violence in an attempt to protect themselves, to save themselves. And I think, you know, people have talked about the Syrian civil war as the first climate war. The long drought, severe drought that preceded that conflict clearly played a role. There are many other factors involved in Syria. But the added stress to that system that resulted from the drought and the sudden migration of 1.5 million people within Syria into cities from the countryside really played a huge role in destabilizing the country. So on a larger scale, as climate change progresses, we would expect to see those kinds of climate-driven conflicts breaking out, especially in South Asia, in the Middle East, in Africa, places which are expected to feel a very severe effect from climate change. And some of those areas, South Asia and Middle East, have nuclear weapons.
So it seems almost predictable that the threat is only, the likelihood of the possible use is only going to increase because of climate change.
Exactly, and that in fact nuclear war may be the way that climate change has its ultimate impact on our species, by provoking a nuclear war.
The icing on the proverbial cake.
Exactly.
Yeah, it seems like we don't give enough attention to how these kind of crises may interact with each other. We seem to treat climate change as that's one thing, and nuclear arms, that's another thing, but it seems like the intersection of these two threats could be really the death knell, the real thing which does it.
Exactly, and you know, there's a whole constellation of those are by far the two most important, but resource depletion, toxic degradation of the environment, overpopulation, it's all part of the same phenomenon. And it, you know, in a rational world, scientists would be brought together under the auspices of governments to figure out how to deal with this crisis which we have created. And in fact, instead, what you see is governments and large corporations just bickering about who's going to pay for it and who's going to not pay for it, and who's going to continue to do the things which are so harmful because they're making profit off of it right now. Fundamentally, Malthus was right. There is a limited carrying capacity to the planet. We don't know what their carrying capacity is fully, although we're getting a sense that we may be rapidly approaching it. And the fact that we haven't reached it so far doesn't mean we're not going to reach it. The resources of the planet are not infinite. And at some point, we're just going to outstrip them. And we may short-circuit the whole thing by going to nuclear war first. But if we don't, we need to figure out how to manage this planet. And that's anathema to many people who view any effort of the government to deal with these huge crises as something which is bad.
Yeah, it seems like there's so much to do, but nuclear weapons are comparatively easy, should we say, in operational terms, not political terms, easy compared to climate change to solve.
Well, I think that's true. I think nuclear weapons pose a much greater threat even than climate change and a much more immediate threat, but it's also a relatively discrete threat. I mean, there are 15,000 nuclear warheads. We know where they are. We know how to take them apart. We need to put in place a political regime to oversee that, as we have for chemical weapons and biological weapons. But this is a doable project. It's just not being done.
Right. So, there we go. There is something that can be done, but whether it will be done is up in the air, shall we say.
It's up in the air, and it's up to you all to do something about it.
That is.
You know, and you all includes me. I'm not putting this on other people. This is a democracy. We have a responsibility to make our country work. And the most important thing our country needs to do is to come to terms with the danger of nuclear war. And we're in the middle of an election, and no one's even talking about this. And we need to start making a great noise making our candidates start talking about this and make them understand what's at stake. And we also have to educate the candidates because they do not begin to understand the danger that we face. And that's true on both sides of this election.
Right. It's just something which is off the radar. It's in the contemporary debate. It's not, people are bickering over such trifling things compared to things which should actually harm us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there is hope in some of the dark, but hopefully that hasn't depressed you all too much, the threat we all face. But this has been a conversation with Dr. Ira Helfand. If you want to know more, go to
www.psr.org or www.icanw.org, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, which is a broad umbrella campaign around the world with over 490 NGOs in more than 95 countries who have come together to seek a treaty banning nuclear weapons, making them illegal, making their possession illegal, as the next step towards their abolition.
So that's an overview of PSR and ICANN and what is going on and what you can do on this issue. So thank you very much, Dr. Ira Helfand.
My pleasure. Thanks. Good to talk to you.
You too.